Nowadays, we know that vaccination is the number one, let's say, action to be performed. In fact, it was very interesting because several years ago, it was published a paper in which several different actions were, let's say, studied in terms of which would be the impact on controlling PCV2 systemic disease. And in most of the scenarios, and those scenarios included multiple pathogens present, good or bad biosecurity, good or bad nutrition, etc. In most of the scenarios, vaccination was the number one in terms of efficiency. However, very, very important, biosecurity. Biosecurity is a plus, not only for PCV2, for any pathogen you can imagine, of course.
The Swinet Podcast Show Canada is only possible with the support and trust of innovative companies like...
Hi-D is a pure, effective 25-hydroxy D3 solution to help pigs improve their vitamin D status. Improve bone health and lifetime productivity with Hi-D. Learn more at dsm-firmenich.com/hy-d. Swine Veterinary Partners is comprised of four clinics across Canada that specialize in swine health, management, research, and development.
Well, good day, everybody. Today I have with me Dr. Joaquin Segales from the Autonomous University in Barcelona, and he's also a researcher with IRTA in beautiful Barcelona, Catalonia in Spain. So welcome, Dr. Segales.
Thank you very much. My real pleasure to be here, Ruud.
So this particular episode is brought to us by the Swinet Podcast Show Canada, and today's topic will be porcine circoviruses. So to start off as a first question, King, what is the history of porcine circoviruses?
At this stage, this is already a long history because even sometimes we are still referred to PCV2 systemic disease as an emerging or re-emerging disease. It's true that the viruses by themselves have been found in pigs for ages. So from this point of view, those are not new viruses. However, it's clear that as time goes by, we are discovering more porcine circoviruses. So far, up to four porcine circoviruses have been discovered. The first one, PCV1, was considered non-pathogenic for swine. And the really important one, I would say, it's porcine circovirus 2, because it was the first one detected associated to disease. At that time, in fact, it was in Canada by mid-90s. It was named as post-weaning multisystemic wasting syndrome, as a condition causing such wasting and very particular multisystemic lesions. Nowadays, we are referring as PCV2 systemic disease, but at that time was a very, very important disease. Then we discovered by 2015, porcine circovirus 3. We know PCV3 is able to cause disease. However, it's not that clear how often the disease is seen under field conditions. And finally, PCV4 is the most recent family member that was discovered around 5-6 years ago. But we still do not really know how important is PCV4, for example.
How big of a problem are these porcine circoviruses for the pork industry? Let's start with that.
Well, if we have to contextualize, definitely porcine circovirus 2 is the one that we have to take into account. First, because it emerged by mid-90s as a severe devastating disease. At that time, and it's true, it was in combination with other pathogens like PRRS virus, with porcine parvovirus, with Ojeski's disease virus or pseudorabies, etc. And when it appeared in a given farm, sometimes huge mortality were observed, and also the number of animals that you were losing was important. So from this point of view, the initial ways of counteracting the disease was based on improving management, trying to avoid co-infections, and at the very end, to improve zootechnical measures that you apply in your farm, including hygiene and things like that. However, when the vaccines came into the market, and that was in a global scale between 2006-2007, amazingly, we controlled so well this devastating disease in the sense that we prevented clinical signs. We are not able to avoid infection, so that the vaccines are so efficient but cannot really prevent infection. But anyway, it was a game changer in the swine industry. So from this point of view, I believe that PCV2 is still one of the most important pathogens in swine, because if you look at the number of pigs which are vaccinated worldwide, probably nowadays it's relatively close to between 90 and 100%, which is a lot. It's the most vaccinated pathogen that exists on Earth at present.
Okay, interesting. So then, is the problem seasonal, or is it geographical, or is it all year round possible to get and in any location in the world?
Well, when we are talking about porcine circovirus 2 and the systemic disease, when it appeared by late 90s and early 2000, it was a kind of a scaling system in the sense that the first discovery was in Canada, but it was a very minoritary disease, let's say. However, it was quite important, especially in Europe, and then in Asia, and then it came really important in North America, but it was around 2004 already. So it didn't appear at the same time everywhere. However, it's not seasonal. So certainly sometimes in winter months, the problems are much evident, but sometimes it's because of other pathogens that they are circulating, or even the climate conditions, because respiratory systemic infections is not unusual to have much more problems in winter times. But in general terms, can be found anytime during the year and at any place. So I would say that, well, this is the main reason, because almost everybody is vaccinating against this pathogen, because it can occur anywhere where pigs are reared.
Now, some viruses, they can pass to humans, or they can be passed by humans. So is this porcine circovirus 2 a problem for people as well?
A good news is that porcine circoviruses 1, 2, 3, 4, are not zoonotic. So from this point of view, people can be absolutely quiet from this point of view. However, of course, for the swine industry, it's a big game player. And nowadays, it's so clear that we must vaccinate our pigs in order to have, as healthy as possible stock. However, the fact that it's not affecting pig in a direct form, we can say that it may affect people in an indirect form, because as long as you are not vaccinating and you have a huge mortality, then the number of kilos of pork that reach to our markets is much, much lower. And this is what happened many years ago.
Interesting. So how can you actually diagnose porcine circoviruses? What are some clinical symptoms and other lab analysis?
This is a very interesting question, because also in terms of diagnosis, I believe that PCV2 offered some change as well, almost, I would say, 25 years ago, or even before. And basically it's because porcine circovirus 2 systemic disease, or even the reproductive disease, or even the PCV3 disease, they are multifactorial. In a sense. And this implies that the mere presence of the virus is not enough to have disease. So the fact of monitoring by PCR, by serology, looking for antibodies, etc., is they are excellent monitoring tools, but they are not really diagnostic tools. So the diagnosis needs, in general terms, three major criteria. The first criteria are clinical signs. Which clinical signs should we expect with PCV2 systemic disease? Basically, wasting, respiratory distress, increased mortality. Those are the three major points. But anyway, you may have reproductive problems as well. So the reproductive problems are mainly seen as presence of mummies of different sizes, similar than parvovirosis, for example. So it depends on what is affected. You may see different clinical signs. But this is just one of the criterion. Then we have a second criterion and a third criterion, which are laboratory in a sense. The second one is presence of typical histopathological lesions. And for PCV2 systemic disease, it's very clear, because we need to see lymphocyte depletion together, this is very important, with granulomatous inflammation in lymphoid tissues. And this is not enough. We should find at least in moderate to severe degree. So we are very stringent in order to diagnose the disease. And the final criterion is basically to detect the virus within those lesions. So if you have the clinical, the pathological, plus the virological criteria together, then you have a clear-cut diagnosis of PCV2 systemic disease.
So if we can follow up a little bit more on the clinical signs that you mentioned, what level of mortality do you need to reach in order to talk as a pork producer to your veterinarian, I think I may have circovirus or any kind of wasting. I presume wasting means weight loss. What level of weight loss are people seeing when pigs are infected with circovirus?
Well, this is difficult to say because, as you can imagine, during the last 15 years, vaccination has been used all over the world. So nowadays, it's rare to have cases of PCV2 systemic disease. They seldom occur still, but probably because it's an inadequate timing of vaccination, or maybe because they are co-infections that jeopardize the vaccine efficacy. But before vaccine came into the market, for example, the typical situation was you should expect one farm in which the increase in mortality surpasses in a clear-cut form the, let's say, historical level. So an increased mortality is one of these herd case definition criterion. And then, of course, this is not enough because even, let's say, mortality is very generic. This mortality must be accompanied by those general symptoms like wasting, growth retardation, poor doers, etc., with normally the histopathological and virological approach that we indicated. Because the major issue from a clinical point of view is that there's a lot of diseases that can cause with wasting. So, of course, at the very end, you need to discriminate. So from a clinical point of view, it's difficult to discriminate. Nowadays, since we are vaccinating, the first option is never to think that this is PCV2 systemic disease. But we as veterinarians, in most of the cases, we still are interested in, anyway, I have wasting, I'm vaccinating, but let's rule out. So sometimes most of the diagnosis is oriented in ruling out that PCV2 systemic disease is present.
And then in order to diagnose the lesions that you mentioned, obviously a veterinarian is essential to help with that. Like, how would you go about it? Do you then do a post-mortem on pigs in the barn, or do pigs get shipped to a lab in Catalonia? How does that actually work?
Well, the best option always would be to try to go for a global diagnosis. What I mean with that, instead of thinking on ruling out or confirming PCV2 systemic disease, try to go wider and think that might be I have PERS, might be I have influenza, might be I have Glacial parasuis, might be I have all the list of pathogens that should be included in the differential diagnosis. So the best recommendation always is try to confirm, rule out those pathogens, and very, very important is to perform necropsies, because necropsies allow you to see lesions which might be compatible with one or other pathogen. But I insist, sometimes if you see lesions compatible with interstitial pneumonia, for example, this certainly fits with PERS, fits with PCV2 systemic disease, and depends on the distribution, may fit with swine influenza as well, even it's slightly different. So from this point of view, the support of the laboratory techniques is important. But as important as that is that the field veterinarian select the right animal for doing the necropsy and do the right interpretation of the lesions. Because, very important, forget the possibility of using chronically affected pigs for diagnosis. We know that in those survivors, the peak of viremia happen at a given time point, but then disappear or decrease over time. And if you are going for very chronic affected animals, sometimes the virus is not yet there, or sometimes the amount of the virus is relatively low, etc., and do not fulfill the PCV2 case definition criteria. Then we are lost. So from this point of view, it's very important to go to the acute, subacute part of the problem in order to guarantee that the animals that you selected for the diagnosis are the most suitable ones for confirming or ruling out it.
So in other words, the final step in order to confirm via lab analysis that it's actually circovirus, you need to have animals that are in different states of infection as opposed to just look at severely sick animals.
Exactly. And more importantly are the ones in the acute, subacute phase. Those are the much more informative always.
Now, we talked already a little bit about prevention, but how can this PCV2 virus disease be prevented?
Well, nowadays, we know that vaccination is the number one, action to be performed. In fact, it was very interesting because several years ago, it was published a paper in which several different actions were, studied in terms of which would be the impact on controlling PCV2 systemic disease. And in most of the scenarios, and those scenarios included multiple pathogens present, good or bad biosecurity, good or bad nutrition, etc. In most of the scenarios, vaccination was the number one in terms of efficiency. However, very, very important, biosecurity. Biosecurity is a plus, not only for PCV2, for any pathogen you can imagine, of course. So biosecurity should be extreme. Try to control co-infections. Co-infections at the very end, and this is related with the pathogenesis of the PCV2 systemic disease, what happened is that those pathogens are able to favor PCV2 replication. So as long as you can avoid those pathogens priming afterwards PCV2, then might be you can keep PCV2 to a lower levels in which no clinical disease is observed in the farm. So biosecurity, controlling concomitant infections, of course, good nutrition, etc., everything, I believe it's important in order to ensure that your vaccination will really work. Even we know that vaccine itself is sufficient. But I always make the joke, but it is not a real joke. We cannot only rely on a syringe and a needle. We have to rely on good management, good hygiene, good work in our farms always.
If we can follow up a little bit on the vaccination, like what kind of protocols do you recommend? Do sows need to be vaccinated regularly? And when is the optimum time for piglets to be vaccinated?
Well, if you look at the disease itself, the animals that got disease are piglets. Are the piglets in their growing stage, normally at the end of the nursery, and then early fatteners or mid fatteners sometimes. So to vaccinate piglet is almost compulsory. And in general terms, the vaccination tends to occur around weaning. At least here in Europe, it tends to be between 3-4 weeks of age. This is important because we have excellent vaccines that overcome maternal immunity. So being such a situation, we are vaccinating even in presence of maternal-derived immunity. With the big thing is that the window in which the immunity might disappear never happened, because when you are vaccinating and the piglet generates their own immunity, there's still immunity of maternal origin. So from this point of view, you have a prevention for the piglet. However, over time, we observed that by means of vaccinating only piglets, we were able to diminish the infectious pressure to a high level. And this implies that might be you reach the end of the finishing period in which animals did not seroconvert because of the natural infection. So if you are creating seronegative animals, those are naive animals that if used as replacement stock, they could get infection. And it's a kind of a starting vicious circle. So from this point of view, even I would say more than 10 years ago, we start vaccinating the replacement stock, basically in the quarantine period. By doing so, certainly you are preventing disease in most of the cases, I would say. However, recently or in the last few years, we observe that when you are analyzing the sow herd, I mean, sows of different parity numbers, you observe that sometimes the at least measured by antibodies, with ELISA antibodies, which they are not the protective ones by definition, but anyway, gives an idea of herd immunity. When you see that there's a lot of variation in ELISA values in your sows, then you might realize that you might have subpopulations of animals in your farms, which might be some are sufficiently protected against the virus, others not. So in order to try to, homogenize the herd immunity, is good practice to vaccinate sows. And then you should select how do you want to vaccinate your sows. It's in a blanket fashion. Do you want to do at a given time period during gestation? Well, this is debatable. However, for example, we never recommend vaccination of sows at the very end of the gestation, because otherwise you are generating lots of antibodies that they will be transferred to the piglets. And there's the possibility, which is, let's say, not the usual way, but there's the possibility of extremely high antibody titers, which are transferred to piglets, and then interference with the intake of vaccine by piglets. So it's a matter of maintaining this kind of balance. But nowadays, if you want to control in the most wider form, you should vaccinate breeding stock, your replacements, and the piglets. However, there's a significant number of farmers that by just vaccinating replacement stock and piglets, they work so well. One thing which is important, when you're vaccinating against PCV2 and you do not see overt disease, you may say, my vaccine is working. However, remember that PCV2 systemic disease is multifactorial disease. So if being a multifactorial disease, it could happen that might be I do not see clinical problems, but might be I'm not getting the most from my vaccine because simply I do not have the triggering factors in my farm. So from this point of view, for the reason it's important to follow up, to monitor, to be sure that your levels of PCV2 in your farm are as low as possible.
But you also mentioned prevent co-infections. Are there particular pathogens that to worry about? Like you mentioned PRRS earlier, are there perhaps some viruses or bacteria we should really suppress together with vaccination for circovirus?
Well, the number one enemy nowadays certainly is PRRS, at least in Europe and probably North America and certain countries of South America. If I would be in Southeast Asia, for example, I must confess that classical swine fever is another great enemy, or it depends on different countries as well, African swine fever. Yep. Of course, when you have African swine fever, the rest of things are probably not that important because this is your target in order to limit. But anyway, all those pathogens may exert negative effects, especially in terms of promoting replication of PCV2 and getting eventual disease, or even interfering with the vaccine efficacy. Because, for example, it has been demonstrated that at least certain PRRS virus strains may cause alteration of the PCV2 vaccine response, especially altering the cellular immune response. So from this point of view, there's not a lot of studies, but whatever that occurs at the time of PCV2 vaccination, then may affect the real efficacy of the vaccine under field conditions.
You also mentioned biosecurity as part of prevention. Any particular part that is most important? Like which factors do you think can carry porcine circovirus? Are the people the most important, or can feed play a role?
Well, from this point of view, I believe that when understanding biosecurity is an understanding in a conceptual manner, in the sense that very likely do not expect PCV2 enter into your farm. PCV2 is already in, so the enemy is inside already. That's the issue. However, the point is to keep it to a lower level possible, so good disinfection protocols, the fact that at the very end you want to have logically the most healthy farm possible. And these biosecurity issues are much more thinking on the potential co-infection that may exert an effect on PCV2 rather than the entrance or the transmission of PCV2 among between farms. Because I already said, PCV2 is already in your farm.
It's time for our famous three.
WiseNetics turns podcast airtime into brand authority. We don't sell ads, we elevate voices. If you're ready to boost your authority in the industry, access WiseNetics.com and speak with a brand authority specialist. Let's transform expertise into influence, starting now.
Final one relative to circoviruses. Do these viruses actually change over time, or is the PCV2 today in 2025 the same as when it was discovered first in Canada?
Well, what has happened over time is that PCV2 has changed. Of course, it's a DNA virus, and one may say being a DNA virus, the degree of evolution should be, let's say, not at the level of the RNA viruses. But one of the very first discoverers about PCV2 is that, amazingly, this virus changes evolves as fast as a number of RNA viruses. Amazingly, this doesn't happen with PCV3. PCV3 is a much slow evolving virus. However, PCV2 evolves quite fast. Nowadays, we, based on the criteria of genotyping, we consider they exist between 8 and 9 different genotypes. And of course, one may say this is very worrying because the virus is changing over time. That's clear. For example, during early 90s, the PCV2 genotype A was the dominant in different parts of the world. When we start with the big outbreaks of disease before the advent of vaccines, was PCV2B genotype the one dominating? And nowadays, in which we are vaccinating in a massive manner, PCV2D is the most frequent one. There's one good news, the sense that all vaccines in the market are able to prevent the clinical signs caused by any of the genotypes known so far. Of course, there are some slightly differences between the genotypes and maybe even to the level of protection, but at least the clinical protection in general terms occurs with any type of vaccine, as long as this vaccine, of course, is a validated vaccine, registered vaccine, etc., etc. So from this point of view, we are lucky in the sense that probably we have many genotypes, but at this stage, you never know what could happen tomorrow, but probably at this stage, we have one single serotype still.
If people want to follow up on this topic, what is your favorite resource to check up and read up on about porcine circoviruses?
Certainly, as a researcher in this field, if I have to follow up circovirus scientific literature, journals. Basically, what I follow up are journals, different journals devoted to pigs or devoted to viral infections. Of course, this is the most interesting one. However, if you are talking in general and not thinking on circoviruses, but talking about swine health in general, of course, one very, very important source, it's always the Disease of Swine book. Disease of Swine book, I believe, is like the Bible for the veterinarians thinking on health.
Thanks very much for the discussion today. So my name is Ruud Zijlstra, and this concludes another podcast for SwineNet Canada. And with me today are Dr. Joaquin Segales. Thank you very much.
My real pleasure, Ruud. It has been a nice time with you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with elite remote talent without a time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on your $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.